This is Stephen Whitaker and Eddie Chang coming to you live from Port Radio, WDOT. And we have another interview right now with Mr. David Gwartzman. He is a Holocaust survivor from Poland, and we have some questions for him.
Good morning. We would like to start with the first question. Can you just describe to us life prior to the Holocaust?
I would say it was very similar to what a youngster, a teenager would have in this country. Yes, we did experience some anti-Semitism in Poland before the war. In my town, it was not of the violent type. Yes, I would have occasionally a rock or a snowball thrown in my direction, a broken window, and occasionally I would even be called a dirty Jew. But all in all, I would say I had a normal life. I played soccer, skated in the wintertime, collected stamps. I had a lot of friends, including Christian friends. And it would be a very normal life, school being mostly taken up most of the day. But I still had enough time to spend in sports and socializing with family and friends.
And did you lead a particularly religious life when you were younger?
My father was not a very Orthodox person, but we did go to the synagogue every Saturday morning and most holidays. We did have a kosher home, but that was true for most Jewish people in Europe. But it was not the center of my life, religion. I started out in a religious school, but I was there only for half a year and eventually went to a more to a regular Jewish Hebrew school before I started grammar school. There was religion involved, but it was not the center of our life.
Now, I understand in 1941 you were in a Jewish ghetto.
That was already after going through a whole number of experiences under the Germans. But the ghetto was opened sometimes early in November of 1941, where approximately 6,000 Jews from our own town and another 2,000 from nearby villages and towns were squeezed in into a very small section of the town, a few blocks surrounded by barbed wire with signs outside saying, "Jewish quarters, do not enter at the risk of your life. Any Jew leaving the place will be executed."
So while you were in the ghetto, did you ever really start to face God and asking questions and why you were there?
I was too young probably at that time to do that. I was up in the, when the ghetto was formed in 1941, I was only 13 years old. And not coming from an ultra-religious family, religion was still not the major issue with us. Also, I was happened to be very, very lucky. My father, who was fairly well-to-do, had money, was able to smuggle in some food for the family, even enough to help some other fortunate people with some food and so on. And also, I was lucky enough to be able to attend school. It's an illegal school, usually with two or three more friends by teachers, and it was a clandestine school. If we would have been caught, I would have been killed. But until the last day of the ghetto, when the ghetto was liquidated, I had a regular school, both the regular subjects normally taught in a school and also the Hebrew lessons. I learned Hebrew. I learned German. I had the first lessons in English. I had a wonderful history teacher, and I had a wonderful education in the ghetto.
So in the ghetto, there were 6,000 Jews?
8,000. But by the time a lot of them died out of hunger, exposure, taken away to camps. So by the time the liquidation came about, there may have been only 7,000 or so.
And how many guards were posted at?
Well, there were not too many. There were maybe four or five. Just people were afraid to go out because there were unfortunately some of the Polish people, not all of them, would watch and see, and if they would find the Jew outside of the ghetto, they would notify the Germans, and they would be shot. There were dozens of them shot in that manner.
So if there were four or five guards for only 7,000 people, did the Jews ever think about forming like a resistance?
No. This is a misconception that a lot of people don't realize. Before the war, no person owned a gun in Poland except a policeman or a soldier. It just was not heard of. It was against the law. And within the Jewish population, it was even more so. No Jew ever owned a gun. So we never thought of resisting. Besides, at that time, until the ghetto was liquidated, none of us knew what is in store for us, that they are extermination camp and that people are being taken. Even when they were, when my cousin came and told us that there's a lot of murder going on in eastern Poland, a lot of people didn't believe him. As a matter of fact, some of them wanted to arrest them for spreading false rumors. So people did not believe it, and no person would be willing to risk his family to start something that would bring the Germans into the ghetto, and they could kill his entire family just for starting a rumor.
Now, apart from any kind of revolution or uprising, were there ever any attempted escapes that you know of?
In the ghetto, no, because at that time we did not know that we are going to be exterminated. Once the deportation, which really took Treblinka, took place, and we found out what was going on, then immediately everybody, I and my family and everybody else, started looking for either joining the partisans, finding a hiding place, changing, trying to get Christian birth certificates to pass as non-Jews. I mean, everybody who could, who had access to any means of trying to help themselves, would try. But that did not start until, maybe 1942.
And were you sent anywhere else after this ghetto? Was there any place in
particular? Yes. After the ghetto was eliminated, the day, the 22nd of August 1942, because we were forewarned by a cousin of mine in another town what was going on, we built a hiding place in the attic of our building so that when they gave the order that every Jew has to come down, I and my family did not. We went and hid inside of that attic. We were able to watch and see what was going on, but we didn't go with them. And that was only one miracle of first not getting killed. There were quite a number of them since then. After I was hiding in the attic, my father sent me out to try and save myself. I was caught by a German and Polish guard, and we were brought to and being sentenced to death. And we were brought to the jail, and at the evening and the night, we were supposed to be shot. When the two executioners came, they spoke German, and the jailer spoke Polish. They couldn't understand each other. So when they started opening up the cells to find us, they took instead two Christian boys, a boy and a girl, on the second floor below us, and they mistook them for us, and they took them out and shot them instead. And the next day, instead of shooting us, they brought us to a labor camp. That's how I wound up in a labor camp. I was there only for maybe 3 months. But from that labor camp, we managed to escape and then joined with the rest of my family, and we were hiding for 2 years under a pigsty. And it's at that time, in July of 1944, that we were liberated by the Russian army.
So what was the experience like when you were liberated?
We did not believe that there was any Jews at all surviving in Europe. We thought we were the only survivors. As a matter of fact, when we came back to our town, out of the 8,000 Jewish people in the ghetto, only 16 of us came back alive, and my family of five among those 16. No, it was very, very hard to be joyous because all my uncles, aunts, grandparents, all of them were dead, all my friends. So while, yes, we were happy that we were alive, but we could not enjoy it because of what happened to us, to a point where we could no longer live in this country. And I ran away from home, even while the war was going on, smuggled myself through a number of borders, eventually wound up in Italy alone. And then later on, in 1946, my family joined me in Italy.
And from Italy, did you come to the United States?
Yes, in Italy, I had a wonderful time. The Italian people were just great. I graduated, I learned Italian within a very short period of time, graduated from high school, and had 1 year at the University of Rome. Came here in 1948 with my family. Within 4 years, I, my brother, and my sister graduated from university. I got married. Went into the army for 2 years and served in the American army for 2 years in Germany. I'm multilingual, so I was an interpreter. Later on, I had a very interesting career as a pharmacist. I had several pharmacies for many, many years. My son is a physician. My daughter is a doctor of child psychology. I have now 6 grandchildren. I had a very happy life. And since 1995, after I retired for the last 30 years, I've been doing what I'm doing here. I've traveled all over the country, given over 400 talks, including 2 in Europe. And I hope to continue that for as long as I'm alive.
Now, just as a closing remark.
Wait, I just have a quick question. You were liberated by the Red Army, and you just said that you served in the U.S. Army in Germany during 1940.
For that was in the early 1950s.
Right. And how did your views of the Red Army as a liberator change?
It's a very good question. While I do have a very negative point of view of the Russian government, they were trying to convert me into a communist, which I was very resentful. I'm not angry that they taught me Russian, that's fine, but they also were trying to teach me Leninism and Stalinism, which I resented very, very much. However, the Russian individual soldier was very, very nice, very pleasant, and very good to us. They shared their bread with us. They were very, very nice. And when later on, as an American soldier, I had to confront and possibly fight them, I really had very mixed feelings. Because while I hated the Russian government, I loved the Russian people.
All right. Now, just as a closing remark, you had said that you go to speak at universities and schools and things of that nature. And what are some of the main points that you try to convey to these students? What are you trying to teach them?
My major point is that, yes, I teach tolerance, but I feel that even tolerance is not enough. Just tolerating some other people and saying, oh, you have to be nice to them. No, it has to be also acceptance. Tolerance alone is not enough. You have to be able to somehow realize that every human being is just as important as you are. And the only way one can have a relationship with others, no matter whether the color of their face, the shape of their eye, their religion, or whatever. It doesn't matter whether they come from Africa, Asia, Europe, or Australia. We are all the same people. None of them are better than us. None of them are better than us. We are not worse than they are. Every human being has the right to liberty, to the pursuit of happiness. It's in our Constitution. And that Constitution should be serving for every person in this world.
Wow, that's a very powerful message. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Eddie Chang and Stephen Whitaker. We'll be right back.